We see what's going on in the media, but do we really understand what's going on? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry, it's great to be back with you. And I think we should dispense with all the chat about the weather. It was about 70 degrees here yesterday, and today it's snowing.
Yeah, I've learned to stop talking about this weather because before you get the words out of your mouth, it's changed again.
Yes, exactly. Well, it is springtime in Ohio, so...
Yes, indeed. We live in a temperate zone, and boy, is it ever temperamental today.
Yes, so. It is. And last night we had, I don't know if you had it or not, but boy, we had the tornado sirens going off all over the place. And
we didn't have the sirens, but boy, I'll tell you what, we had a light show.
Oh, yes.
I haven't seen this much lightning in the sky. And I mean, just firing off one right after the other, probably since before my wife and I got married. And, you know, we've been married, well, it'll be 25 years this year.
Well, so. Yeah, it was definitely cloud to cloud. And a couple times I was back in my office, which is out in a pole building out in the, behind the house. And I heard a rumble start up. And it just went on and on and on and on and on and on. I'm like, what is that? And I went outside. Well, it was thunder. But this rumble of thunder went on, for 20 or 25 seconds. I mean, long enough for me to walk from one end of the 50-foot building to the other end to go out the side door and have a look and make sure that that rumbling sound wasn't a tornado. And I said, I better turn on some kind of local communication. So I went to the computer and turned on one of the local TV stations just to see, it's lit up red, yellow, purple, and it said, yeah, you're under a severe thunderstorm warning, and you're also under a tornado warning. And now, we didn't actually see a tornado, but they saw rotation up high.
Right. And
rotation up high can suddenly become rotation down low, so they give us the warning. Yes. I'm not sure if anything touched down yesterday or not. I haven't really paid. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 4th, and so I have no idea whether or not anything touched down or not. My guess is somewhere it did. But, I was up a couple of times during the night because I didn't sleep so well last night. And, there were rumbles up until about 1 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, it's springtime in Ohio is always fun.
Yes, it is. It's always an adventure. Yeah, you know, we didn't, like I said, we got a bunch of lightning and things and a bunch of rain and a bunch of wind, but I don't believe, they talked about and showed some pictures this morning on the news of just right across the river in West Virginia. This one picture I thought was very interesting. It was somebody's backyard trampoline, you know, one of those big black ones with
yep.
sidewalls
yep.
for kids, hanging off of a transformer on top of an electric pole with about 20 or 30 wires running here, thither, and yon, where it had been blown out of somebody's yard and blown up into this transformer.
Yes, the wind does strange things.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't take a tornado. All it takes is like a 60-mile-an-hour gust, and those things are airborne, even though they're mesh. The mesh is close enough that it's a sail, essentially. So unless you got
it
anchored.
Right. It basically picked it up like a sail and put it right on up there.
Unless you're anchored.
So,
yeah. Speaking of anchoring, yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of, but we hope that, you know, folks in our listening audience didn't take damage, things like that. You know, I'm looking out around my house. I don't think anything got damaged. But, you know, then I'm seeing photos and things posted on social media. And this one's pretty interesting because it's this massive storm front cloud with some rotation, and it's like taken right outside of like London, and then one in Grove City. And I'm like, yeah, I remember when I lived in Grove City, I think that's the last time we had a really nasty storm that I remember was walking out the back door of my apartment at the time when we were living there early on. This was like right after we had our oldest child. And I walk out the back door of our apartment and look at the sky, and the entire sky, including the air around me, was this hazy yellowy green color.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the clouds, you know how you like see like a bed of cotton balls all packed together real tight?
Yeah.
That's what the sky, and it was just like, it looked like the underbelly of some big lizard was going over top of us.
I know what and you mean.
It was quite exciting to see that. I'm glad that, you know, didn't have a situation, and I hope that nobody had the situation of it losing anything else other than maybe, like, well, a trampoline or something of that nature.
Yeah, well, let's hope that trampoline. I feel sorry for the power guys who have to go out and remove that stuff, because it's definitely not recommended. And by the way, those clouds you described, I saw last night. Those are called mammatus, M-A-M-M-A-T-U-S, mammatus clouds. They look like little hillocks that are hanging down out of the sky. And they can be all kinds of different colors, but when they're that kind of a greenish, when they're that greenish yellow color,
yeah,
that's a bad thing.
Last night, the ones I saw. I could tell it wasn't a good thing. I just wasn't sure how bad it was going to get. So
yeah, that being said, I feel sorry for the power guys who have to go down and remove that kind of stuff, because let's face it, if you went and tried to remove that thing off a 20,000 volt transformer, I'm pretty sure the result would not be pretty. And it's the people like that may not be a problem, because that may have shorted out the whole neighborhood. I've had a transformer. I used to be the first house off the transformer when I lived in Westerville. And one night a squirrel got in it and it blew up. And I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard that sound close up, but you're like, what was that? You know, did somebody have a grenade out in the yard or something? I don't want to go look. Sure. You know, what's happening? But you go out there and it's throwing kind of a bluish green spark and all that stuff as it shorts out. And then the whole neighborhood goes black. And then you have to wait hours for somebody to come and hook it all back up, put a new transformer up. But, yeah, I do feel sorry for the power people. And let me tell you, my neighbor has been busily taking down trees that were endangering power lines between our two properties. And I'm all for it because I get the wood, which I use for heating. But he missed one because Saturday night the wind stiffened a little bit and one of those came down, and it came down at exactly the right angle to miss two cars parked in our driveway.
Oh, and, well, thank God.
And the power line. Yeah. So
I thought you were going to say, and it came down exactly the right angle to catch as much damage as it possibly could.
No, we get home and there's big limbs and branches in the yard. I go, what is this about? Was the wind that high? And we take our flashlights on our phones out and go in the, what we call the turnaround here in the driveway. And I go, oh, dodged a bullet there. Wow. There's debris on the cars, but all the big stuff missed. So, yeah, wow. We thank the Lord for that. Thank you for not crushing our cars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's good to hear. So I guess we are going to talk a little bit about the weather.
Yeah,
so
we
But, you know, it's interesting, Chuck, because, you know, just even with the weather, you know, we can't necessarily predict what's going to happen with the weather, but we can do things, and some of the things that we do can either help or hurt. I mean, you know, you can plant trees out to do a windbreak, and that can be helpful, or you can plant them close to the house because they're pretty and you're like trying to, you know, beautify an area, and then when a good windstorm comes along, because they're in the right spot, you end up with damage to your property or persons or whatever, because you had planted something too close to a structure, and the wind, after time and after it grew, the wind decided that it was going to take it out for you. And that's kind of an interesting analogy, and of course maybe I'm stretching the point just a little, so forgive me, but I think that's an interesting analogy to what's happening in our culture today, because we're going to be talking about a few things here in a couple of minutes that are in the media right now, and we want to analyze it from a little bit different perspective, because, you know, as you and I both talk offline when we're looking at this stuff, there are all kinds of things that float around when some tragedy or situation happens, and probably a good 80% of it is completely fabricated and is completely somebody's opinion that bears no resemblance to the facts of the matter. And that's okay, because, you know, people, we've got this, we're now in this culture where people want to be first out the door. We live in the instant gratification universe of Instagram and Snapchat and all that other stuff. And, you know, of course, I think Drudge Report kind of got this whole thing going with being the quote-unquote first to break the Monica Lewinsky scandal way back when, during the Clinton administration. That's what made Matt Drudge's bones and made his website so popular, was he was the first, you know, he was first out of the gate with finding out about this.
He was the first to actually publish it. It was given to several other news outlets first.
Right, and they chose to be kind of hidebound and insular about it, and they wouldn't publish it, but he went ahead and ran with it, and, well, today his website gets how many billions of page views a year, Chuck? I mean, the man probably is set for life at this point because advertisers pay serious money to run ads on the Drudge Report. And it's one of those things where he was willing to say, hey, I got to plant the, you know, I got to take a risk. I got to step forward and I got to do this. And whether he did it because it was the right thing to do or whether he did it just because he figured it would make him, is give him some notoriety, boost his page views on his blog, what was a blog site, basically. It became a news aggregator site because he really doesn't put up any of his own articles. He just posts everybody, the things he gets from everybody else. But he's made a pretty successful living off of it. But again, it's the question of you get out what you put in. If he hadn't have put that story out there once that he got a hold of, would we be talking about or looking at the Drudge Report today? My guess is not. It would be like so many of the other blog sites that have basically been subsumed and gone the way of the dinosaur because of things like Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and places where people are having more immediate content being dumped to them constantly. I mean, take a look. How's HBO, how's Cinemax doing now that Netflix and Amazon Prime is out there? How is the theater doing? They're not doing so well because people are changing when they can do it whenever they want to. You know, they can pull it up on demand. They can watch something that's brand new and just, you know, from the comfort of their home or on their mobile units or their tablets or wherever they are, sitting in an airport at a doctor's office, driving in their car, although you shouldn't drive and do that. Maybe your passenger could do it. But you can pull up entertainment and watch it whenever you want to. So why wait and try to figure out, okay, does the theater, is it running this movie that I wanted to see tonight? Oh, gosh, the only time they're running it is like after my kid's bedtime. Okay, can't go. Well, nowadays, you bang, 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 and it's there. And that, I think, is part of the root problem we have is instant gratification, Chuck. And I think we've allowed that to creep into many other things, and we're starting to see a harvest off of that. But before I dive deep into those particulars, if you will humor me for a few minutes, I ran across an article that I would like to read because I think it's on point to what we're talking about today. And it's not a very long one. It's just a few paragraphs, but it's from our friends over at the Chalcedon Foundation, or Chalcedon, whichever way you pronounce it. I've heard it pronounced both ways. And this is an excerpt from a book called A Word in Season, Daily Messages on the Faith for All of Life, the second volume. And it's an article by theologian and philosopher R.J. Rushdoony, and it's entitled Seeds or Weeds. I'm going to use this to kind of set our tone here. And Rushdoony starts, he says, how do you get vegetables out of your garden? By planting vegetables, of course. This is a fact almost too obvious to mention, except for the fact that most people seem to have forgotten that you reap what you sow and you harvest what you plant. And he uses Galatians 6:7, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. He goes on, he says, now if a man simply kept weeding a garden patch without ever planting it to vegetables, we would certainly have a right to call him at least a fool if he expected weeding to give him vegetables. We should, in fact, question his sanity. But this foolishness is exactly what millions of, quote, good Americans, unquote, are dedicated to. They do nothing but pull up weeds, and they expect to harvest vegetables. How? They are always fighting the weeds which crop up in the life of America, in the churches, schools, and organizations. And this is all that millions of them do, pull weeds. Meanwhile, the country and everything in it goes downhill. Make no mistake about it, the weeds of communism, atheism, and permissiveness must be uprooted. But what good will all this weeding do if no sound seeds are sown? The net result is simply a better patch for new weeds to sprout in. Jesus said of the man who rid himself of an unclean spirit without submitting himself to God and bearing fruit to God, that such a man becomes then a dwelling place for eight unclean spirits, quote, and the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation. That's a quote from Matthew chapter 12, verse 45. It says, when people are simply interested in getting rid of their weeds, their problems, and have no desire for planting seeds for moral and spiritual regeneration, then they are only the worse off for their efforts. Before you start pulling weeds and expecting to harvest vegetables, be sure you plant seeds as well. Perhaps that church or school is only a weed patch and will not be anything more. But, above all, plant the seeds, sow the word, establish truly Christian churches, free and independent Christian schools, establish a Christian family life and a godly operation in your farm or business life. The times may look bad for making a start, but there's no harvest without a planting. And he wraps this up. He says, "He from Ecclesiastes 11:4, he that observes the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap." It says, men who think they can get vegetables only by pulling weeds are crazy. Why be one of them? So that's from, again, that's from the book A Word in Season, Volume 2. So, and you can find, we'll have a link if anybody wants to go and look for that book. But that's, I thought that was a very cogent analysis of what I think the actual problem is, Chuck, because, you know, as we're looking at some of these various situations that have been going on in our culture, whether it's the political stuff, whether it's the cultural issues, and there could be dozens of them, you know, from the school shootings to the Me Too movement to we can go down the list of the current crises. Pretty much every last one of them is really, I think, a weed pulling movement. They see, quote unquote, a problem and they want to eradicate the problem, but they have no interest in sowing different seed in order to have a different harvest. You know, look at the, you know, look at a lot of these things. Okay, oh boy, we're gonna, you know, let's take the shootings for example. Well, we're gonna ban assault weapons. Well, that's great, except they did that in Britain, and so what's happened now that London now has a larger murder rate than any city in the United States because they're now using knives to kill people since guns have been banned. That was a weed pulling, you know. We're going to pull up this nasty, noxious weed we see, and boy, when, as soon as we pull it, we're going to have these wonderful, wonderful tomatoes or this great corn that's going to magically appear that we can harvest. Doesn't work that way. No. You know, Rush Dooney's absolutely right. If you don't sow good seed, you're not going to harvest good fruit.
I love it that he used it. I knew it was Rush Dooney, and I said, I wonder if he's going to go to that parable where the demons are dethroned in the place, and it's swept up and cleaned out and not replaced with anything. And when they go back, it's seven times as bad as it was before they cleaned it out. Yes. Well, what's the reason? Well, you didn't replace it with anything.
Right, exactly. You basically just emptied it out and then just decided, okay, it's fine just to have it empty.
Exactly.
And I liked how he said it. It isn't just replace it with anything. It was that the man who had an unclean spirit ridded didn't submit himself to God and didn't bear fruit to God. In other words, he didn't replace it with righteousness. He didn't replace it with those things of life. He just left it barren. And I think that's a big problem in our culture, Chuck, is all of these movements, mainly pushed from the liberal atheistic left, are all weed pulling movements, the weeds that they believe that are weeds, you know. And of course, if you look at some of the analogies, you have to consider that what they consider to be weeds, many, many other people consider to be fruit. You know, if you don't like jalapenos, you may pull up all the jalapeno plants in your garden, in somebody's garden. If you're allergic to tomatoes, you may decide you want to dig up all the tomato plants. Now, does that change anything? No, it just causes other people who could enjoy those fruits, not to be able to enjoy them, you know, not to be able to benefit from those things. Because the pulling up of weeds or what you consider to be weeds is not necessarily in and of itself a bad thing. But doing that as your end goal of everything is not going to be, you know, ultimately fruitful or successful for you. I mean, it's just like, you know, Chuck, I know you got a fairly large plot of land out there, and so do I. I could go all day long and pick up trash that blows into my, you know, yard and field from the road and from every place else. But if I never mow my yard, and I don't plant hedges or something or put up a fence to keep people from throwing their stuff over into my yard, am I really harvesting anything, or am I just, you know, doing a holding pattern and, you know, having to keep going out and doing it again and again and again and again? And I look at that as a analogy to, okay, we're going to ban firearms in school, or we're going to suspend kids who draw a picture of a soldier with a gun in his hand, because that's how we're going to take care of it, is we're going to make the guns out to be evil and bad. And again, as you and I have mentioned before, Chuck, a firearm of any type is an inanimate object. It's no better than a rock paperweight that if somebody picks it up and swings it at somebody else's head. You know, if somebody picks up a firearm, points it at somebody's chest and pulls the trigger, the gun didn't kill the person. The person and the animus that they had and the utter disrespect and lack of compassion for other human life, the sociopathic, possibly psychopathic motivations are what killed that person.
Well, exactly. It's a tool. It's a tool that can be abused. What's it for? I was thinking about this morning. What's a gun for? Someone in the media will tell you, well, the only thing that an AR-15 is for killing. And I'm like, okay, what if I have one and I have it my entire life and I run hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of rounds through the thing? And never once do I kill anything. In fact, never once do I aim it at anything other than maybe a target or a tree or a tin can out in the woods. Or is it for killing? Well, it could be if it became necessary. If someone broke into my house, if someone showed up and started shooting at my home for some unknown reason, could I use it for that? Yes, I could. Would I want to? No, that's the whole point. It's people that decide that they want to use that tool for something like that. For instance, I could just as easily bang somebody over the head with a shovel. I've got a dandy one here with a nice, like a 5 foot long handle. It's a really long thing. It's a spade, you know, has a flat end. That'd make a dandy headbanger. Is that what it's for? No, it's for digging holes in the ground. Can I abuse a tool? Sure. Can I abuse it to do something bad? Yeah, I can bury bodies in my backyard. Am I going to do that? No, I'm not going to do that. Why? Because it's an abuse. The fact is, it has to do with the mindset of the individual with the tool in his hand. Are some people that shouldn't have a gun getting a hold of one? Yes. But what the real problem here is a kind of a strange mental attitude, Barry, out there floating around. And it's becoming more and more and more and more and more prevalent.
Sure.
And I think you and I discussed some of this, and that is the idea that I matter more than anybody else. Me, 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 I, me, me, me. Is that hard to get away from? Yeah, but you always, you know, what is, when Christ talks about love in a lot of cases, does he really mean like romantic love, or does he mean just some kind of an emotional this outpouring of emotional feeling toward people? Is that what it really Christ means by love in a lot of cases? Show your neighbor love and that kind of thing. Is that what it means? The answer is no, that's not what it means. Love is doing something for someone at your own sacrifice, doing things for people that you may not want to do something for. Is that an act of love? Yes, it is. Now, is shooting someone because you don't like them an act of love? Certainly not. It's an act of hate. This is where we're running into problems. That person wasn't showing me proper respect, and therefore I can kill them. Or that company did bad things to me, and therefore I can go in and shoot the place up. Who's at the center of all these things when we look at them? It's
me.
It's I.
Well, Chuck, and I think that this gets to our thing. We pulled up weeds, or tried to pull up weeds. If you look in education, and I think this all stems from education. I think three factors in education. Number one, it stems from the disengagement and dissociation that many parents have with their children because they believe that putting them on the bus or dropping them off at the school building ends their responsibility for educating their own children. And number two, I believe that the whole overweening concept of in loco parentis that the government schools have taken to say, we know what's best for your child, and so we will train them up in the way we believe them to go.
Right.
And thus feeding them not just reading, writing, and arithmetic, but Ritalin regulations and reimagining of what the truth really is. Now we've got situations where, I'm working with groups now, that, we have what would be considered legally obscenity in any other instance being allowed in the schools and the school libraries because we've written in exemptions in law that teachers and et cetera, can't be prosecuted for pandering obscenity. But what we pander now to many of these students, if you look at popular teen fiction and you look at some of the textbooks, it's nothing but, pornography and obscenity that's being fostered as normal behavior to kids. And then to top all that off, we had, and this started way back, Chuck, and it's going under different names, values clarification, blah, blah, blah. You can name it what you want it, but what we call it now is the self-esteem movement. And the self-esteem movement said that because our children are so fragile, we need to build up their sense of self. We need to make them feel good about themselves. And if you've seen, over time, you've seen that transpire into, we can't give out awards to just some people who succeed or excel in a sport or something. We have to give awards to all the kids that participated. Or, we can't have winners and losers. Well, gee, Chuck, how many places in real life have you seen where there are no winners or losers?
Oh, nowhere.
Thank you. Nowhere. But because we're so worried about our children's self-esteem. Now, and I kind of, this thought has crossed my mind more than once. We have done such a great job with the self-esteem movement that we have an unprecedentedly high rate of teen suicides now. Because, really, when you're full of yourself, there's nothing else left. And when you finally realize that being full of yourself is empty, what do you do? Where do you turn? It's no wonder that kids contemplate and threaten and usually, oftentimes, these are cries for help. These are cries for an adult, a parent, a leader, a responsible role model to set boundaries for them. I think the girl down in Cincinnati who, is in the middle of a court battle because she has said she'll commit suicide if she's not allowed to take hormone therapy to alter herself and her self-perception from being female to being male. Now, biologically, that's never going to happen for her. You can't, no matter how much mutilation she goes under a knife with physicians who, frankly, have lost their sense of morality.
Well, of course they have
violated their Hippocratic oaths by especially for a young lady. giving her a double mastectomy and removing her breasts and possibly removing her reproductive organs and then shaping a false male reproductive organ that will never reproduce anything, and then feeding her full of testosterone so that she starts sprouting, a beard hair and her voice deepens in order to create the illusion that she's somehow done something that is impossible, which is changed her DNA from female to male.
Yeah, it cannot be done. It's okay. It's biological.
But we have to do all this, Chuck, because, oh gosh, if not, she may commit suicide, and we have to be protective of her self-esteem, and her self-identity, her self-worth comes from her faulty notions of what reality really is.
The threat to commit suicide is proof positive that she is mentally ill.
Absolutely, that she is struggling with a mental issue that should be addressed, treated, and her parents want to do that. Matter of fact, when she got depressed, that's how her parents went to Children's Hospital in Cincinnati to seek counseling for her, to help her, and when they got her in there, they sent her right over to the gender reassignment office, and they basically greenlit her getting on hormones because she needed to be reassigned. Well, of course, we found out that with this particular clinic within Children's Hospital in Cincinnati, 100% of the young people who go to that clinic get diagnosed as needing gender reassignment.
Yeah, because, it's like having, it's the old saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And voila, you adopt a certain worldview and all you have is a hammer.
Yeah, that's true.
And
it's by default. And again, just like the analogy with the Rushden quote, if you want to have vegetables, if you want to have good fruit come up, you can't just rip up weeds and then let everything go and somehow magically it's going to germinate into a fruitful garden. We can't go just pumping kids full of self-esteem and empty platitudes and then wonder why we have people shooting each other or mutilating their bodies in the name of needing to feel something that they're not. And again, the self-esteem thing, Chuck, I think is part and parcel of what just happened out in California yesterday. And that was this this young lady who went to the headquarters of YouTube and started shooting people. Why? Because she felt she was being censored and her videos weren't getting enough views. And it was YouTube's fault, and so therefore she went out there to basically take her revenge against YouTube, harming her self-esteem. And then the more that comes out on that, the more it's looking, and I'm sure the questions are going to arise, was this related to terrorist activity? And I'm sure that there are going to be some groups like Al-Qaeda or Hamas or somebody who will gladly step up to claim this woman as part of their jihad against the evil Satan of America. But honestly, this one doesn't pass that smell test. Not by a long shot. This was a disturbed young woman who felt that, she was the center of her own universe and she was making these videos. And I saw a couple, three of them. And of course, now they probably picked out the most egregious. But it was fairly clear that she didn't have any problem with self-esteem. And her problem arose when the YouTube community didn't respond to her in the way she thought they should respond. And when her page views started going down and her new videos were not being watched nearly as closely, because probably after a while, people started realizing this gal's disturbed and they stopped watching.
Well, if you look at the sort of the tentacles of her viewpoint, she's a militant anti-meat person, a militant vegan.
Okay.
And this is interesting because she's Baha'i. Most people would automate she's Iranian and therefore she must be Muslim.
Not necessarily.
there are Christians in Iran, and there are also people like that are Baha'i, and I believe that there's Hindus, a small number. Of course, there's all kinds of, they're Buddhists and that kind of thing. This woman's a Baha'i. Normally, Baha'i is a And the whole vegan thing, it supposedly goes hand in hand with the, you know, peaceful coexistence, you know, not being non-combatants and that kind of thing. It just goes to show you that me sort of overrode everything. And again, we have another case where radical high self-esteem. And in fact, you know, this you brought up this self-esteem thing.
Yes.
I heard a person who said, you know, this isn't really such a great ideal, this whole self-esteem business. We have to be careful with it. And what they did was they went into prisons and they did self-esteem examinations on a number of prisoners. And what they found out was that a lot of the criminals in the local jails and in prisons had extremely high self-esteem.
Esteem, exactly. They had some of the highest self-esteem of anybody they'd ever measured.
Exactly. I wish I could find that study. Unfortunately, you know, you're going to have to take my word for it, and you can do your own Google search.
We'll find it. We'll link it to our blog site on our
Unfortunately,
feed.
Some of these things come into your head. You know, you're not thinking about it when you're out doing research, and you don't save those bookmarks. But I can remember reading this study years ago, and I said, this is not the way we should be going. I mean, teaching these people more self-esteem, thanks, that they're highly self-confident. They're sure they can get away with robbing a bank or knocking over a liquor store or stealing a car. No, they don't have any self-esteem problem. What they have is a morality problem. And here's where we run into trouble with the with what's going on in schools. And that is, as in the parable of the that came up in, at the beginning of the program when we started talking about Rush Dooney's article there, that parable, you broom out, you know, you run the demon off and you broom it out and sweep it up and get it ready. And what happens? Well, seven other demons come in. Okay, what were we told? Old, terrible, repressive American morality, meaning really Christian morality, because American morality was, in some ways, a perverse form of Christian morality. And we remember when you were a kid, you always heard about, oh, those horrible Puritans, and they were horrible people, and they had this repressive morality. Well, if you actually read any of the Puritans, they didn't have any repressive morality. They demanded that God's law be followed according to the way it was written. You know, did they punish sex before marriage if you got caught? Yes. That kind of thing. Was homosexuality forbidden? Yes, it was. Why? Because it's forbidden in Scripture. That kind of thing. So what did we do? We broomed out any references to God and morality from the school. And what did we replace it with? Well, we replaced it with a kind of a counterfeit morality. We replaced it with love, 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 self-esteem, self-esteem, self-esteem. You can't say anything bad about anybody, even if, you know, even if what they're a terrible person, you're not allowed to say anything bad about them because that will make them feel bad. Children who were bullies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to stop hitting him, but he can't say anything back to you if you do. We'll handle that. You know what happened to bullies on the playground when I was in school? Bullies on the playground usually beat up the little kids, but some kid from a higher grade would come in and say, "You knock it off one more time, and I'll knock you out."
Yep, that's usually what happens.
You know, and you can call that white knighting or whatever, but, you know, a lot of times teachers wouldn't do anything. And sometimes you had to, I can remember getting bullied when I was in school. And basically one time I just got sick of it and I knocked a kid to the ground. I knocked his basically, hit him in the mouth and he didn't bully me anymore. Funny how that works. Now, what I can remember my dad, telling my dad this was going on. He goes, knock him down. I go, they'll throw me out of school. He goes, no, they won't, because I'll go in there and take you in there and sit you in your seat myself.
Yep. I had the same type of deal happen when I was, gosh, I can't even remember, maybe fourth grade. Had a guy in the school who was a bully. He was older. And, we were living in this little town, and of course they had one of those little street fairs, around one of the holidays or something, you know, in the summertime. And I had gone in, because we lived just a couple of blocks off the main drag, so I had gone in to enjoy what was going on. And the kid, you know, started bullying me, and I came back home, and, you know, I was pretty shaken up about it, because, you know, I was younger, and I didn't know what to do. And my mother said, you're going to go right back in there, you're going to go right up to him, and if he does anything, you're going to knock him on his rear end. And I'm like, okay. And so I'm like, all right, that's my marching order. So I went right back in. And of course my mom followed me a little far behind just in case something, you know, got out of hand. But I went back in, and now I went up to go do something, and here this guy came again, and he shoved me up against something, and I just stopped. I looked at him and I just decked him. I mean, fist to jaw on the ground. He's laying there. I broke my finger doing it. So I ended up with a cast, but that was the very last time that he or anybody else at our school ever bullied me.
Yeah, it
because the word got around very fast that I had basically knocked this guy's slats out from under him, and that was it. Once they realized that you're willing to defend yourself, then that changed the entire perspective.
And see, that's the difference between, is violence necessarily bad? Yeah, it is, but sometimes you have to meet violence with violence, and then suddenly it stops. That's why sometimes being conciliatory, too conciliatory, it's okay, you know, back up to a certain point. And then suddenly you have to turn and say, okay, this far and no further.
Right.
You run into situations like you get President Obama's line in the sand. Remember the red line in the sand?
Yes.
And the jokes about, okay, well, they crossed the red line, so now we're at the fuchsia line. The purple line, the blue line, the green line, and if you watch out, there's a tangerine line that you can't cross. In other words, the threats are empty. At some point, you have to show, no, the threats aren't empty. If you keep that up, you're going to get knocked out, or at least a black eye.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to give a tyrant a bloody nose.
Let's just take the example, Chuck, of, okay, we've had two, in the last few weeks, we've had two quote-unquote school shootings. The one we've heard about the most is the one at Parkland down in Florida.
Sure.
Where, you know, the young man came in and the crews came in and shot up a bunch of kids, and they basically were all like sitting ducks, and the sheriff's deputies who were supposedly there were all hunkered down outside behind vehicles and things, not willing to go in and face fire. Then you had another situation that happened, what, week and a half, 2 weeks later? School shooting. Guy comes in, starts shooting, shoots a girl, ex-girlfriend. They'd had like a domestic thing. One of the, I think it was like, was it a school resource officer?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was an SRO.
Yeah.
Basically pulled out his service revolver and put the assailant down.
Okay, be careful about this, because that story has changed, and I'll tell you why. He did pull his revolver, and he did point it, but the kid shot himself.
Oh, okay. All right. See, now that I had not heard. Of course, you can't really get a whole lot in the mainstream media about the case to start with, because it didn't fit their
meme. Well, the headline I saw was, it's the usual stuff on Yahoo, the very partisan stuff. But what it said was, and that's another thing we need to get into before we get out of here today, is how this stuff leads into partisanship. But the fact is, they said, well, the NRA's narrative just went down the drain with this fact that the kid shot himself. And I said, didn't go down the drain at all. He shot himself.
No.
He shot himself because somebody showed up, a hard target showed up with a gun.
Yep.
The only reason he didn't shoot anybody else.
And you know what? I don't believe that probably the resource officer could care one whit less about this kid's self-esteem or his motivations for why he decided he was going to, you know, come in and be violent to another student and try to, you know, try to terminate them. All he was doing was saying, there's a threat. It has to be neutralized. I'm going to do what needs to be done in order to neutralize.
He had great self-esteem, that shooter.
Oh, the shooter did,
great
yeah.
Great self-esteem. Sure he did. Because if you think about it, everybody else was below him. Therefore,
right. Therefore, he could kill them with impunity.
Exactly.
Because he was his own god.
Right. So does there need to be humility? There's nothing wrong with thinking you can be self-confident. Self-confidence is a good thing. Self-esteem, not necessarily so. Confident and humble go together like a hand in a glove. Humility with high self-esteem doesn't necessarily seem to be a very good fit. That's the whole point about bringing up the thing about the prisons. These guys have great self-esteem and no humility whatsoever. None.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
There are jobs that, for instance, you and I can do, and we can do them very well. But the fact is that if we went around saying, I can do it better than you, and you can't, nobody can do it as well as I can. Listen, I learned a hard lesson when I worked in corporate America. There is no such thing as an irreplaceable person.
No. Well, I will say one thing, though. Nobody can do me as well as I can.
Well, okay? That's true.
I think it's the only area where you can actually say that legitimately is nobody can do me as well as I can.
Yes.
And that's fine. And that's not necessarily some, overblown sense of self-esteem. It's just an honest assessment of we're all unique. And we all have unique ways of dealing with things, unique talents, skills, abilities, passions, focuses, training, experiences, influences, inputs. Everybody's unique. And that's part of what makes it special. But when you start saying that, well, I'm more unique than you are because if not, then my self-esteem is hurt. If perhaps you're better at sports than I am, then you shouldn't be rewarded for being good at sports because it might hurt my self-image to see you get a trophy.
Look, Barry, there are guys who got into college and got it paid for because they were good at sports. I was never good at sports. Mm-hmm. There were things I was good at, but they don't give the scholarships for that. Did I cry and whine and say it's unfair? I probably may have felt it, but then when I when I really analyzed it, I'm like, well, people pay to watch football. They don't watch, pay to watch people do be able to regurgitate trivial facts, at will. I was always very good at fact, dealing with facts and that kind of thing, and I was always good at critical thinking. Well, you don't win college scholarships on that. Nobody's giving out the critical thinking college scholarship.
And you certainly will not win them today because the last thing a college wants is to have someone to come in who's a critical thinker.
Oh, absolutely not.
Will challenge what they're trying to indoctrinate you with.
Exactly, Barry. I mean, seriously, the first colleges used to be in the business of teaching you how to think, and especially to think critically, and especially in your area of expertise. But the whole reason that you go to a university, the very name, was that you learned a little something about everything so that you could work within your specialty.
Yes.
With a knowledge that went beyond, because that knowledge that went beyond your specialty very often helped you think differently about a situation than somebody who didn't understand those things could. Nowadays, what do? We teach people how not to think critically, stop thinking critically, in fact, and think emotionally. In other words, how do you feel about this? I can remember people say, I feel, especially when we were at Camp America, and I'm like, I don't care how you feel. Honestly, don't. If you feel bad, go to the, go down and we'll get you an aspirin or whatever. Go to the nurse. I don't care how you feel. I don't want your emotions. I want your critical thought on what we're teaching you. And for the most part, the kids we got, because we got a lot of homeschoolers and a lot of Christian-based homeschoolers, they got it because their parents had already taught them that. But when we'd have kids come in from the public school system, very often they were lost because they'd want to go with emotion. Don't you think that it would be good for this? It might be. Give me the reasons behind it. Give me an argument. They couldn't do it. That's where we are. That's where we are. When you watch, for instance, this whole thing with the Parkland school survivors and anybody that says anything slightly disparaging about David Hogg, and I you can read the things that some people are calling him Camera Hogg, which is not a bad description. That kid, when you get him in a one-on-one and try to do an emotional or try to do a logical argument with him, he backs way off real fast because he can't compete. It's all about emotion.
That's threatening his self-esteem.
Well, that's right. That's exactly self-esteem. The whole self-esteem movement has lent itself very nicely to the dropping of critical thinking and the picking up of emotional thinking.
Yes.
That's kind of the point we've been trying to get at. And it's not just playing out in places like Parkland. It's playing out in places like the media.
Absolutely.
Because what is happening, I don't know if you heard this or not, but Sinclair Broadcasting put out a memo that they required their news anchors to read, and the news anchors are going apoplectic. Why? Because it's basically saying, giving what the president of Sinclair basically made them say was the truth, and that is there's a lot of opinion sneaking in as news, as fact. How is that possible? It's possible because the general public, a large portion of them, cannot think critically. Cannot. This is why people get divided. People are becoming very deeply divided because they can't rationally discuss issues anymore.
Right. True.
I mean, this is not the first time in our history we've seen this. We saw it. You read the whole mess from about 1815 up through the war between the states, 1865, the arguments over slavery on both sides, they're deeply emotional arguments. Now, over slavery, who had the better arguments? Probably the North, the abolitionists. But were they acting? Were they discussing it on that basis? No. This is why we had things like John Brown's raid. And by the way, there's a great series on YouTube is talking about the lead up to the Civil War. And wow, it is good. I mean, it is really good. A guy named Chris Calton, C-A-L-T-O-N, Chris Calton. Go out and find those. It's under the Mises Institute. They're between 20 minutes and an hour, these little lectures. And he really has clarified some things for me on my thinking. He's not a Southern apologist by any stretch of the imagination. But we need to think about these things, Barry. And the news, what is the whole thing? What are we seeing happening? If you're watching nothing but CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post, blah blah blah, we get these bombshells that Trump did this and this and this and this and Mueller's looking at this and this and this and this, and it always turns out to go nowhere. Why is it turning out to go nowhere? Because it's becoming clear, if you're listening to the other side of the spectrum, to the alternative media sources, that what has gone on is that the FBI and the intelligence community and the CIA and a number of people in what are being called the deep state got together and decided that, A, we're going to make sure Trump doesn't get elected, but if he does, we're going to make sure that we have the ammunition we need to get rid of him.
Yeah, that's not working out so well for them, though.
It's not. It's working out really badly. In fact, the first indictments are probably going to come down. The first real indictments they're going to come down against former FBI, CIA, and intelligence officials. I mean, it's becoming clear. Some have already been fired. Andrew McCabe, for one. And somebody said the other day, why haven't Strzok and Page been fired? And somebody said, oh, maybe you don't understand how this works. They've probably been turned. In other words, they've been told, if you want to keep your job and not go to jail, you're going to tell us what happened. Now, that's not going to come out because, unlike the Mueller investigation, the investigation on the other side is not leaking because they want, they're serious about getting the FBI and the CIA and the intelligence community. This whole FISA warrant thing, Barry.
Yes.
You and I have been talking about this since we've been on the air with this program.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we've warned that this was going to happen. Those of us who opposed the Patriot Act and said, nope, this is the road to tyranny and disaster. And I've been opposing this since 2001. I've been in opposition to this thing for now 17 years. And yes, every time it comes up for renewal, I'm like, don't renew it. It's because of situations like this FISA warrant thing, where essentially people come in and gather information on you before they get a warrant. Then they go and say, after they've gotten the information, can you please give me a warrant? And, oh, by the way, here's the information we gathered. But the information, they may have all the exculpatory evidence removed. And only they only show you the inculpatory evidence. Now it's turning out that one of the judges that issued one of the FISA warrants actually was in cahoots with some of these people in the FBI. Had direct contact on the cases, and he actually had to recuse himself on a sentencing for one of Mueller's people. This is why, what's his name? The former White House staffer. What was his name? They got a guilty plea out of him, and he was going to go in and be sentenced, and why it's all been delayed, because it's turning out that the judge who was going to sentence him was in colluding on issuing these FISA warrants.
They're amazing.
This is why we have to think critically, folks, and we can't think emotionally. And this self-esteem movement that we're seeing, why we're seeing emotional outbursts, and why David Hogg is getting away with using the most vile and foul language in his presentations.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Flynn, right?
Michael Flynn, yes.
Michael Flynn, yeah.
Flynn was supposed to be sentenced, and they postponed it. And the reason they postponed it was they're now finding out that all the exculpatory evidence was essentially left out of all the stuff that led to him taking a guilty plea. So he's probably going to be – that case is probably going to be tossed. This is what the Inspector General is looking at in this whole mess. Now, how did we get from one place to another? Because it all connects. Even though we're running out of time, we're almost out of time. This all connects, ladies and gentlemen. It may not seem like it to you, but to those of us who've been doing worldview education now for many years, it's all one big machine. And we've just basically given you some of the cogs, some of the gears in the machine.
Right. And the question we have is, to our listeners, are you going to just keep pulling weeds?
Yes.
Or are we going to start planting seeds?
Yep.
Because the seeds we have to plant are seeds of the gospel. We have to plant the seeds of the truth of God's word. And the fact that, you know, we can't sit there and say we're filled up with self-esteem, because Scripture commands us to esteem others more highly than we do ourselves. The whole self-esteem movement is based on a direct contradiction of God's word.
And that is what love is, folks. If you wondered what the gospel means by love, it's esteeming others above ourselves.
Right, which we just are not getting, and our kids are not getting in the schools with the self-esteem movement. And we're reaping the bitter harvest of that with the shootings and the violence.
Yep.
And, you know, the turning out of basically narcissistic, self-aggrandizing sociopaths who, when they feel like they've been dissed or not given the recognition that they deserve, go and create havoc and yep, violence against other people who have nothing to do with why they're feeling the way they're feeling.
Yep.
You know, those people sitting there at the employee cafe at YouTube didn't personally offend this woman who went out there and open fire on them because she didn't feel like her esteem was being held up enough with YouTube's policies.
She wasn't being supported. Well, that being said, we are out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. And please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.